So, philosophers.
Philosophers. What's today's topic, David?
Let's talk about the boundaries of privacy.
What is privacy?
That's a good question. So, to try to come up with the definition on the spot, I would say privacy is the ability to withhold information from other people.
Okay.
Be that information about what you're currently doing or something that you have done. So maybe you're embarrassed by someone else seeing you naked, so you draw the shower curtain when you take a shower. That's privacy.
Or wear clothes in public.
Or wear clothes in public.
Or even at home.
Or at home. Or shut the blinds or things like that. So that's physical privacy.
Okay.
Then there might also be privacy of recordings, be that if you have some private letters that you've written that you don't want people to see them. So privacy is the ability to keep such written information secret, or digital privacy, in which you've recorded some information digitally and you would like to control who has access to that information.
The dictionary definition is the state or condition of being free from being observed or disturbed by other people. I think that's an interesting definition because it uses the term free
right
in there.
That is interesting.
It's weird because I think most people would, you typically would think, as privacy as a restriction being placed on something like, well, for instance, like when you think about private documents, or you think about like confidential documents, you know, like the U.S. United States government can declare, you know, top secret or, you know, yeah, confidential. And that's a restriction on who has the right or the ability to look at it. However, this definition says it's a freedom from something, or the freedom from observation, which...
Well, or the state of being free from it.
Right. Because, you know, something may only have the inherent quality of being private. You know,
it's private until someone looks at it.
Right. It's a transient quality. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't, or a mutable quality, I guess.
Right.
It's not something that's strict to it, to something. So, okay.
It's like being wet. It might be wet for now, but it could dry out.
Right. Or in the case of, well, I'm not going to dig into whether or not water is wet.
Perhaps another time.
Perhaps another time. So, okay. So now that we've kind of got an agreement on the colloquial definition of privacy and, you know, the official definition of privacy, which I think they're pretty, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference. You know, I think this is one of those cases where the colloquial definition is pretty close and spot on to the stated definition. You know, people don't generally use privacy to mean other things other than what it literally means.
Right, it's a fairly unambiguous term.
Right. So that's what privacy is, and now we got to talk about why it's important.
Why is it important? Well, first, I think we agree that it is important. It's something very deep in our psychology. We value it. There are certain things that we do that we naturally want to keep private. Let's see. Why else could we call it important besides, well, we just want it?
Right. And I guess that may, just to go a little further as to saying why it's important, we might look at what is trying to be achieved with privacy. Because I would say that privacy in and of itself is the result of action, but it is an action, or it's a cause for action, as well as being a state of an item. Like, nothing, I don't think anything is just inherently private.
Well, no.
By occurring in nature. Like, yes, things tend to, I guess it depends on, you know, privacy, we mean being observed by other people in this case, you know. So there are places in the world that are inherently private because just no one's there. But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about places that are inherently private. We're talking about things that would otherwise not
be private. It's more remoteness than privacy.
True, but the definition could still reasonably apply. I'm just trying to specify that.
Sure.
When we're talking about,
well, if we go back to the dictionary definition, privacy is freedom from others' observations.
Right.
So it's not that it's a property of an item,
mm-hmm,
that it is private, but rather you may or may not possess privacy with regard to something.
Okay. So in this point is, okay, what are we trying to achieve by privacy? Like what could be achieved by privacy that you couldn't achieve otherwise? Like why would you want to achieve privacy? And I can think of several decent reasons why someone would want to have privacy. I could draw it down to the difference in the acknowledgement that we all have a difference of perspective, you know? And I don't think that this is inherently, I don't think that privacy in this way is inherently dishonest, but for example, things that I would want to do in my own home, you know, I have full and well understanding of what I'm doing most of the time, like most conscious human beings do, from my own perspective. And so I might be doing something that has no effect on any other human being, and no other human being would ever know that I had done, whether they, if they had not observed it. However, me being conscious and having a good guess as to why, how other people might observe this activity, whatever it be, like maybe I like stripping down nude and working at my computer nude. Like I work from home, say I want to work from home and I work from home nude. Say I do that, right?
Sure.
For whatever reason. I'm not saying that I do. I'm not saying that I don't. I just say that.
You may or may not.
I may or may not, right. Now, that's a behavior that in public is deemed unacceptable.
Totally unacceptable.
Totally unacceptable. However, in the privacy, in this case, in my own home, I prefer it. It's my preference, and it doesn't affect anyone else. So in a way, I'm expressing and exercising my full freedom, free from the scrutiny of others, you know. And not only that, but I think there's also this idea that you can't unring a bell, for instance. I think that might have something to do with it. You know, once you hear someone say something or you see something, you can't unsee it. You can't unhear it, you know. You can suppress it, you can repress it, you know, but you can't unsee it, you can't unhear it. And you can't know whether or not you would have wanted to have seen something or wanted to hear something. Until you did. And at that point, it's too late. And so that's a fact of reality. You know, like you can be described a scenario and you can say, I wish I had saw that, or I wish I had seen that, or man, I wish I could have heard that. But you don't really know that. That's just your educated guess, you know. And so that's two things, though, I guess. I'm just kind of wondering now, word vomiting, but that I think that's part of it, you know, is in an area that I control, I get to deem what is worthy of other people seeing, or at least for my own actions and my own appearance, you know. I have the authority, I'll say, to make judgment as to whether or not other people might want to see this or not. And I can choose to exercise that by doing something in private versus in public, or even doing it in private and broadcasting it publicly. You know, I have total control over who knows about something when it's done in private, you know.
More or less.
Or at least I...
Your privacy might be curtailed by someone else's willingness to keep a secret.
True.
For instance.
Right. I guess that's... For me, that's where privacy is rooted, like why we want to have it is, in a way, you know, taking that out even further by what I said, I am exercising control. I'm exercising power in that way. You know, if you believe that knowledge is power, you know, knowledge is any information. So me being able to control the flow of that information by choosing whether or not to keep something private is empowering for me as an individual. So I guess... now that we're this far down on the logic stream, we would want to have the ability to have privacy or exercise the right to privacy as a way of exercising our own power, you know, and having the power to control information. Follow?
Right. Okay. Yeah, I see where you're going with that.
Okay. You know, do you have anything to add to that? I feel like I've tangented at least three times through there.
So one other thing that I think might be interesting to bring up is the psychology of feeling like you're being watched,
mm.
and how that can actually, well, does actually change your behavior. This is a measurable thing where, and you don't even have to actually be being watched. As long as you believe that you're being watched, you will change your actions, no matter how mundane the task actually is.
Right.
You know, there was an experiment, I think it was done in a prison,
mm-hmm.
in which there was a watchtower with blackout glass, so they couldn't tell when someone was in the watchtower or not. So then all of the prisoners behaved as if they were being watched the whole time.
Right.
So there's something to be said about your freedom being taken away from you when you don't have privacy, if you believe that you don't have privacy.
Right. I forget. I have heard of that. It was based on, there was a philosopher who, that was his idea, was that, and he was a political philosopher, I forget his name. If I remember later, I'll add it in the description below, just so to clarify. If I can remember correctly, you know, I don't know if he was around the time of Machiavelli or what, but the realization that, or at least came around in the Renaissance, the idea was that, for political means anyway, there are always going to be more serfs than lords. Always. You know, that was their belief at the time. There is never going to be, you know, and because they are in sheer number, they really do wield a lot of power in that way. And so you can actually subvert them and keep them under control by stifling the leaders of any dissent by keeping the whole population observed. You know, or under the idea that they're being observed. And, you know, you see that kind of pop up in religion.
An uprising can't happen if everyone, if they can't conspire against the leaders.
Right. And those who have the ideas to conspire, you know, you can quell any rebellion like that at its head, you know, if you've headed off early enough.
Right.
You know, I think it's also interesting that idea pops up in religion a lot. I mean, I think that, you know, most gods in religion have the quality of being omniscient, and you know, you hear things like, I know he's not a god, but since Christmas is coming up, Santa Claus sees you when you sleep, you know. But there's the idea of you're being watched to see whether you're good or not,
even when you think you're not.
Exactly. And that's used as a motivator to drive the masses to remain good and behaving in an appropriate way, even when they're alone. And then, you know, the word, what is it, integrity, comes along with it. Like, that's, you know, that kind of goes along with that is, you know, are you an integrous person? You know, can you, integrous, do you have integrity by, do you act appropriately when you're alone and not being held accountable for, you know? And then most religions throw that out the window by just saying, well, you're never really alone. You're always really being watched. Or,
right.
You know, I can't speak to other religions, but in Christianity, there's even the idea of the Holy Spirit who is in all things, and depending on your sect, you know, he's even, if you are a member of the faith, it's within you, and it sees and hears everything that you do, and is a part of an omniscient being as well. So it's like, I don't know why that would be necessary, but, so I guess privacy is the antithesis of that.
Right.
Means of control. So that's both sides of the coin on that, you know, the lack of privacy in that sense being you were, the control is taken away from you in a way, in the psychological sense, you know, or you put it at a disadvantage. It's not fair.
Right. I was going to bring up the example of an oppressive, tyrannical government, and you sort of touched on that already with lords and serfs. That privacy is important because without it, the oppressed are significantly less likely to be able to rise up against their oppressors.
Or at the very least, just confer with each other out of sight of their oppressors. Like, you may not even be organizing a violent uprising, but you'd have the ability to discuss, you know, your grievances in a way that if someone comes across, you have the ability to temper yourself before you go into the public and make your claim.
Right.
You know, there's a good, and this kind of touches on why direct democracies have issues. There's a story about, you know, in Athens, I forget what other faction they were warring with, but one of their vessels was destroyed and everyone got whipped into a frenzy and mad about it. So they met and within a day decided they were going to launch a war against this other faction, when that was just a heated momentary reaction. You know, they hadn't thought it through yet. But if you had had, but you know, on a smaller scale, like if say you and I had a grievance against another person, or especially a person who had power over us, you know, we might be emotionally motivated at first and not thinking logically or not being able to calm down and reach reasonable conclusions first. So if we hadn't had the time to, you know, sort that out amongst ourselves before bringing it in front of other people, it may have been written off initially or misinterpreted. You know, there's also this idea that, you know, humans are consistently aware of each other's, you know, states of being, you know, and we are reactionary in nature in a lot of ways, you know. So, yeah. I feel like I keep kind of walking off the topic a little bit. I apologize. I'm a little scattered today.
You're scattered most days.
I am scattered most days.
So, are there limits to privacy?
I think there are theoretical limits. Sure.
I have an example.
Okay.
So suppose a situation of imminent death. You see someone, come from around a corner or something, wielding some sort of weapon, and muttering about how he's going to kill somebody, and then he opens a door and walks inside with the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a time when. I think most people would agree you should then intervene. It becomes your business to figure out what he's doing to try to save somebody, because to grant him his privacy of what he's up to is probably lethal to somebody else.
You know I disagree with that, though.
Oh, do you?
Of course I do.
Okay.
We've had this talk before, but
have
just
we?
For the sake of others. Yeah, that's none of your business. You know, I'm not responsible for the well-being of the person he may or may not kill. And I don't think I'm responsible to ensure that person's well-being or even alert somebody else, you know.
Okay. So, I'm not saying that you're responsible.
Sure.
For it, because you're not. It's his decision to murder somebody if he's going to do it.
Yeah, but I'm not also responsible for his potential victim either.
No, you're not responsible for his victim either. I didn't say that. So what I'm saying is if such a situation troubled you,
sure,
and you decided that you would like to help his potential victim, then you most people would agree that you're justified in violating the alleged murderer's privacy in order to get to the bottom of the situation and stop it.
You'd also be violating the privacy of the potential victim.
Maybe.
Well, I'm assuming, okay, in this scenario, I made some assumptions that you see a guy with a weapon muttering about murder, clearly heated, walking into a different area. It would only make sense to my mind that he was approaching the person with which he had a grievance.
Sure.
So in that case, that person had already violated that person's space potentially. So now I must commit the same act in order to just gather more information to make a better educated guess as to, okay, was my to try to confirm my suspicions, you know. Do you follow?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I guess, try to make it personal. If I were about to be murdered, I would be okay with somebody else invading my privacy in order to save me from being murdered.
Yeah, but I don't feel like that works either, because you can't use your personal measure of what is deemed acceptable or not to then imply the deemed acceptability of another person, you know? That'd be like me saying that I wouldn't want someone to do it. So based on my preference, other people shouldn't do it, and they're in the wrong if they do so, I guess.
This is sort of like the person who's upset that someone stopped them from committing suicide.
Right.
What's the quote from the Disney movie? You didn't save my life, you ruined my death. So, I suppose there might be some people like that, but that's not most people.
True. But still, I feel like any time... In this case, we're leaving it too much up to preference, I feel like.
Okay.
And too much up to individual judgment. I would rather have a more cut and dry...
Okay. Do you have a proposed system by which we can evaluate this?
Sure. I would err on the side of the rights of privacy and would say that you have no right to enter that person's home, or that they're enter a space in which you do not have permission to access. Of course, there are going to be spaces that are obviously public that everyone is, in, you know, tacitly allowed to traverse, or even look into or see. But if I constructed a house that was a black box, has a door on it and no windows, and it's roughly the size of a house, you know, no one has the right to enter that home without my permission, right? Now, there is already something like this. The police, for example, have, we are, in America, we have rights to prevent unlawful search and seizure, right? Now, the police just can't come into your house and invade your privacy as it is today without a handful of reasons.
Right, without a handful of reasons. Well, right. I've laid out some reasons.
Right. Okay. In your case, I reject that that's an acceptable reason.
Okay.
Because it can't be proven. Like, for instance, you can't prove the motives of the... You can't use the motives of another person, your perceptions of another person's motives without any proof to then commit an activity that would violate the rights of another person based solely on your perceptions of another's motivations. It's like there's nothing solid. There's nothing that would hold up in a court by just saying, well, I observed a person in this state and I made a judgment call. Okay, in that case, yes, you would be responsible. And I would be even okay with the person, say, you break into my black box house because you saw somebody you thought was going to murder me. Now, say I'm sitting there naked working on my computer and the guy coming in was like my brother or my dad who just happened to be mad about a movie he watched, and I have given him permission previously to come into my house regardless, and I'm embarrassed that he came in, but I'd already given him permission. Then you walk in and have violated my privacy. In that case, I still think you are responsible, but as long as you are still responsible for that. So in that case, yes, it just like in all ways in reality, you can do whatever you want to do one time at least. Okay?
Like, well, sure.
Sure. As long as you, and in this scenario, you would be perfectly fine accepting the responsibility of that, so be it. You know, I just think that I would have reasonable means, if I so chose to, you know, engage you in civil court over it, for instance, you know, saying you violated my right to privacy. I seek compensation for the breaches of my privacy. And then, I guess, in that case, it would also be up to you not only to explain yourself to the authority of the land, but you could also apply, you wouldn't be criminally prosecuted, right, for violating someone else's privacy. You could be civilly prosecuted. So you could even try to convince me that you were doing it out of a certain, you know, doing it out of a sense of my well-being, you know, and then it would be a transaction between two individuals. The issue being is it's already an involuntary transaction because I have no choice but to enter into this engagement because you've already violated my freedom. And that's my point. As a rights extremist on this, personally, that's where I take issue, and I would want to find a much more airtight case. So going back to my example of where we already stand with police, you know, the authorities would have I think a person of authority would have the ability to do those things. In the case of, say, you know, they heard a scream, they had reasonable cause in this case. And the reason I say that is I would be more okay with that is because they are also held to a higher standard.
And okay, so
could be criminally prosecuted.
This raises the question to me then, why should I, so to speak, treat your rights differently just because it's my job to? Like, just because it's my job to investigate cases like that, you know, I hear a scream inside of a building, I should check it out. Why is it different with it being my job to do that as opposed to me just being any old citizen walking down the road? I hear something and I decide I should investigate this. Somebody's in danger.
Right. Well, I believe that the reason it should be that way is because when it's your job, you have tacitly agreed to accept those responsibilities, right?
But you, the person inside the house, have been no less violated by this.
True. But the authority by which I was violated, right, and is operating at a higher level of responsibility. So if they fail in their responsibilities, like they make a bad judgment call, it can cost them more than just a civil suit. Because in the United States, if the police violate your privacy or seize your property, as opposed, you know, in this case, I guess you can't say seize property because when a person does it, it's theft. And the police does it, it's just legal.
Forfeiture.
Right? It's a different thing. But the police break into my house trying to help me, well, I would have it to where you know, that person had already accepted the responsibility for that in advance. Like, they are defaultly criminally responsible for that because we hold them into higher responsibility because it is their job. You understand? And not only that, but it allows for the individuals who have the ability to do that, or it allows for the people who we expect to do that. Because anyone technically has the ability, but the people who we expect to do that, to be prepared to make those decisions on a more regular basis. You know, they have more training, they're more prepared. Not to say that an individual couldn't be just as prepared, but because it is their job, because they have sworn oaths and they have taken upon themselves that additional responsibility, they should be held to a higher measure as opposed to an individual who is not responsible. I could jut off and give another example of where this is the case. The Good Samaritan laws, for instance. Like if I were to witness a car crash and there's a person there injured, I'm only expected to respond in a way that I'm reasonably capable of doing, right? So if I see a person, I have no medical training, and I see a person who's in a car and they're crushed in there and they're alive and they want me to help them get them out, right? Or even if they're unconscious, doesn't matter. Okay, I'm not medically trained. I don't know how to do this. If I do it wrong, they could die, and I'm not held and I could still be held responsible for that, you know? Or if I'm a doctor, I could lose my license if I intervened, as opposed to a person who was on call and responsible. Like if the paramedic arrives, okay, they have the right, and they're expected to, and it's their job to help that person, and they are more trained and capable of doing so, right? And if they don't, they are held at a much higher liability than just a civilian, you know? So in this case, I think it would depend whether the person was a civilian or a member of some official authority, you know, or the government, I guess, in this case. And this also, I guess, kind of hinges on individuals having freedoms from these other prosecutions. So in order to preserve that, they stay out of the way of the right infringing upon the freedoms of other individuals. Whereas since we're already going to monopolize force into a single entity, the government, we might as well go ahead and fork them also up to their responsibilities to do so as well. But I'm not sure how you temper that if they also have the monopoly on the force. That's to me where the real problem is, not in whether or not an individual has the right to violate your privacy. Do you see where I'm coming from this, I guess?
I guess where I'm getting hung up on is that I don't necessarily agree with your concept of authority. Like to me, a police officer is just a person like any other person, except it's his job to do police things.
Right.
It's just a job. They do, but I don't think that they should get special treatment. They're just a person. If they screw up, then they screw up. If they don't screw up, then they don't screw up. And if it's something that a reasonable person feels like they should help with, it's the police officer's job to help with it in the case of, you know, imminent danger or something like that. Imminent danger from a human threat, anyway. The police officer is being paid to do it, and so is therefore expected, you know, not to be a coward about it. And the civilian has the discretion as to whether or not they want to do it. But I don't think the police officer should get special treatment if they quote unquote violate something, you know, somebody's privacy to help them. I don't think they should get special treatment from anyone else. You know, if you become certain based on circumstantial evidence that something is about to happen which should be stopped, then you should be able to stop it, whether it's your job to stop it or not.
Oh, I'm not saying that you shouldn't or couldn't. I think that's up to each individual to make that choice. I'm just trying to explain why I wouldn't.
Right, but we're trying to identify the limits of privacy.
Right, and I'm saying you passed the limit in that case, you know, because you still have violated the privacy of another person. You know, I think a person's right to privacy should still be protected up until that point. You know, and this is one of the weird cases where you can't know, right? That's kind of the whole point of privacy. You can't know whether or not you're going to actually be invading someone's privacy for good or for worse until you've already done it. It's like breaking into a vault that you don't know the contents of, you know, except there might be malice behind that. I guess at this point it comes down to the intentions of the individual. If you had good intentions, right, and you had good intentions backed up by circumstantial evidence, right?
Right.
And you could prove that you had good intentions and prove that you had, or actually, so no one else could prove that you had malicious intentions.
Right, I was about to say, yeah. It's actually on the accuser.
On the accuser in this case, right. As long as they can prove that you did have, as long as they cannot prove that you had malicious intent or that you had, didn't have reasonable cause, you
or
should
that
be
you
fine.
Were being negligent or whatever.
Right. So, I don't know. See, I think I would also have to draw the boundary. I think we would also need to take into consider what lengths an individual has gone to ensure their privacy. You know, like say, for instance, this person who's trying to come murder me in my black box house, right?
Sure.
I have gone out of my way to install every security measure feasible. There is no way you can break into my house and violate my privacy, right? You know, that wouldn't happen, you know. I'm also trying to understand, I'm also trying to rationalize, if it is your right to maintain privacy, is it also your responsibility to ensure that you have that privacy? Because obviously that seems like the answer should be yes. Like, oh, I have the right to privacy. Well, I can't just start stripping in a public place and saying, anyone who looks is violating my right to privacy.
Right.
You know, because that's not how that works.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, it's same as if you, you know, left your blinds open and right. You're doing something embarrassing inside. If someone from the sidewalk sees you, your fault for leaving the blinds open.
Exactly. So I guess in the event of someone trying to break into my house or invade my private, compete against my measures of privacy for my own good, it's also, I'm also kind of at fault if they don't.
I think it comes down to, now this is going to be a little bit ambiguous, but whether someone is attempting to invade privacy or not. Like, there's a difference between, you know, let's say that someone is in your house who you've invited in your house, and they happen to see a letter you received that's open on the counter, and they kind of look over at it and they can read it. I don't think that's a violation of your privacy. You left it out. If it was in a sealed envelope and they opened it to look at it, then they violated your privacy.
Right. Maybe we should talk about, okay, let's take your proposal then in this case and run it to its logical extremes. We've kind of already done that.
Okay.
But let's go ahead and do it formally. Like, your proposal was the limitations of privacy. You want to go ahead and clear up your assertion?
Sure. I wasn't defining a hard limit, but I was providing an example in which I perceive a limit to be relevant. So, privacy, it is okay to, quote-unquote, violate someone's privacy in an attempt to save them from imminent death.
Okay. So, there's a few qualifiers in this. So, it has to be death. It can't just be bodily harm.
Well, okay, I'm taking the extreme case because I think that's the easiest one to defend. Because I'm trying to come up with an example in which a limit is reached.
Right. Okay.
We can, you know, trying to find exactly where the line is will be more difficult than determining that the line exists.
Sure.
And that we've crossed it.
Well, I'm trying to take this, your use case here, and try to look at the worst this could go wrong.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Sure, I see what you're trying to do.
Okay.
So, no, it doesn't have to be death, necessarily.
But in this case, let's just start with imminent death.
All I'm asserting is that death is past the line.
Okay. So, imminent death. Like, you can't enter someone's privacy if you think they might get murdered at some point. It has to... So I guess
I just had a premonition that 3 weeks from now you'll be murdered. So I came into your house to protect you.
Yeah.
No.
So I guess it's more specifically, I guess you have reason to believe someone will be murdered. You have reason to believe that someone will be murdered.
You have reason to believe that if you don't intervene, someone will die.
That's what I'm looking for. That's what I wanted to hear is inaction in your case would result in someone's death.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear because that to me is more substantial.
Right.
That means more to me, I guess. Okay. So the way this could be gone wrong. So the weakness in this is obviously, of course, with any, whenever time you try to put definitions to humans is people's perceptions.
Sure.
The weakness is obviously in trying to determine in hindsight whether or not a person had the correct state of mind in order to make, did they have the correct,
were they a reasonable person? Is that what you mean?
Pretty much, yeah.
The mythical reasonable person that we keep talking about when we talk about laws and things like
right,
that.
Right, the reasonable person. Who the hell is that?
Right. I haven't met this reasonable person exactly. What would they do? Yeah.
I wouldn't know. I've never met him. Okay. So that's a lot more airtight to me. Putting it in terms of you can do this if you believe, if you sincerely believe that inaction on your part would result in the death of another person imminently, right now, you know.
Right. The police don't have time to show up.
Right. You're not trying to do anything preventative necessarily, long-term preventative. You believe that that person will not be able to, will not be informed
in time to defend themselves or
exactly.
Whatever.
You are doing it solely because death will happen if you do not right now. You know, if there's any ambiguity as to, well, I see the guy down the street and he's walking towards the house, you shouldn't try to invade the home immediately. You should try to contact the police.
No, but you don't know if he's going into that house or not. He might be going another block.
Exactly. So
he might be going home, you know, whatever.
Exactly. So, okay, I actually am a lot more okay with that definition now.
Okay.
After mulling it over and you putting in that terms, I'm a little more okay with that because that's a lot harder to exploit. And when I say exploit, I often think of, well, who's the biggest perpetrator of privacy violations?
The government.
The government. that's who I am trying to think about is, could a government, you know, how could a government agent like this? That would be really difficult, you know. The weakness still lies in...
Well, and it would be hard to point the finger at a government agent who acted on that because I think, you know, who would condemn... an officer of the law for intervening in a case like that.
Right.
Probably no one.
Exactly. And, yeah. Okay. I'm much more okay with that.
Okay, so now let's get a little bit... Now that we've talked about a specific example, can we think of any ways that we can identify limits of privacy without having to take each case one at a time and go through... gruesome detail to find out.
Nope.
No.
No, I'm kidding. I think we can start extrapolating from this as to what the limits are. I think that the biggest thing we touched on there that I think could be used as a abstract rule of thumb that could then be instantiated into many instances, specific instances, is the concept of inaction. Like, my inaction will result in blank unless, you know, this is the only action I can take right now. The only feasible action I can do is to invade your privacy.
Right.
That's to me is the most important thing. So I think as a rule of thumb, all of the limits to privacy should have that as a characteristic is... Did you invade this person's privacy? Yes. Why? Because if I had not, because I had good enough reason to believe blank, and if I had not, it would have resulted in either that person. I think death for me is the good limit because up until that point, because I do believe suicide is morally wrong. Won't get into that today. That's a future topic. However, I do believe you have the right to do it.
So anyway, let's get away from that. That's a topic for a different day.
That's a topic for a different day. But in this case, it's like, you know, but up until that point, you know, anyone else choosing to end your life is obviously a huge violation of your rights, because the right to life is probably the first and foremost. Right. So limits to privacy. I guess your limit to privacy is...
I don't know if I would draw the hard limit of death, though. Because, you know, there are lots of terrible things someone could do to you that don't kill you.
Okay, that's the plus one limit, then.
Right.
Like, the plus one limit, like, the limit plus one is death. So we need to find the not in this case.
Yeah, what's the limit?
Well, what other infringements on your freedoms could a person do to you?
That dismemberment?
Yeah, you don't technically have to be dead to be dismembered.
Right.
But then again, you know, if a person could dismember you, they could also kill you.
They could.
Right, but then again, what's the difference?
But if I'm just the guy on the sidewalk who sees the alleged murderer walk in, you know, with a blade of some sort, how do I, you know, do I know whether he's going to kill you or whether he just wants to cut you up with it, you know?
Right, well, at this point, it's like, well, you would all... human psychology time, you always assume the worst. So
right, okay.
Death is assumed in that case. Okay. So I guess...
And so then that basically covers serious bodily harm.
Yeah.
Because bodily harm could reasonably lead to death.
Exactly. So I think it should just be drawn at... I guess now I'm backing it out more and more and thinking, if I just see someone else invade your privacy, right? I actually have no idea what they could be doing in there thanks to that privacy.
Right.
That whole privacy thing. So I'm imagining a chain of events where a guy, you know, you're an innocent civilian standing there. You're a reasonable person. And you see a guy dressed in all black with a mask on and a baseball bat with a nail through it walk through somebody's door. It's like, okay, I can't imagine very many scenarios in which that's an okay thing unless this is your house. But I see you, like, kick the door in. So it's like, okay, I think something bad's about to happen. So I run in after him, right? Because I don't have time to call the police. This guy's probably just about to murder somebody, right?
Right.
So another civilian that didn't see the first guy go in sees me. So I run in, and they just see a guy, and say you're a concealed carry holder, and you're drawing to go into this building. Well,
so
all
someone
they
else
see,
saw you run into someone's house with a gun.
And this guy also happens to be a concealed carry, so he runs in after you. Now there's a fourth civilian.
Right.
And so I'm just imagining the wonky chain of events. Like, this is pretty unreasonable, but it's like, you could essentially lose your right to privacy through proximity.
Right.
In that case. However, you know, I think there's also another obvious factor here that could be a mitigating to this. So, say, you know, if you, the individual in your, like, okay, here's a scenario is that, you know, I run in trying to help this person, right? I think they're going to get murdered. Well, the person inside defends themselves with a shotgun and kills the first assailant now, and then sees me and then kills me. Now, is that person in the wrong? The person who defended themselves?
It depends. So now we have to think about, okay, now we assume the victim in this case, the person whose home was invaded, let's think about that they are a reasonable person. TM.
TM. Copyright pending.
Now, if you merely run in and they shoot the invader, then they see you and you throw your hands in the air, they would not be reasonable to follow up and shoot you. Mm-hmm. They should not reasonably fear for their life any longer. There's no longer someone threatening them with a weapon.
Yeah. Well, thanks to that privacy, though, no one's going to know if you had your hands up.
Fair, but we're asking if that person is in the wrong, not whether anyone will know if they're in the wrong.
That is also true, my apologies.
So, now, if you're a concealed carrier and you decided to draw and run in after the guy with your handgun, then the homeowner might reasonably assume you're a threat if you don't throw your hands up quickly enough.
Right. But then again, I think we're still safe here because the moment you as an individual take any action that violates the privacy of another person, even for that own person's own well-being, I think a reasonable person understands the risks that could potentially be associated.
Right.
And that's where it's okay. I think, and this is the great thing about it being, you know, you're free to do this if you really believe it's the right thing, is you're free to do it, and you're also free to accept the consequences of your actions.
Sure.
And if you don't, you're not held to account. And I think that's why looking at it from the other way around, like I think, you know, we already sort of do in public as acceptable. Me being more paranoid would shrug it off and say, man, I hope that guy inside has a gun, you know?
Right.
You know, and he's observing.
Well, there is something to be said about the situation you mentioned in which you're a concealed carrier, someone else sees you running inside with a gun, decides to follow you in with a gun, and you end up with a really bad scenario. You know, this is why in concealed carry classes, they'll often tell you, if you're not certain who the victim is, don't get involved.
Right.
You can't go into a situation, you don't need to pull your pistol on a maybe. Because, which is why generally the advice is, if it's not you or someone you're with that is being aggressed, just let it go.
Right.
So there is something to be said about that, but then it's just a personal judgment call.
Yeah.
You don't have the duty to intervene, I don't think.
That's where I'm happy with.
But you should have the ability to intervene if you make the judgment call that it would be better.
Okay. I'm content with that.
Okay.
Actually, I'm content with that. And I feel like the logic behind that is applicable, because we've stepped out even further, is just to say, you know, I would be okay with erring on the side of privacy, because ultimately it's the responsibility of that person who wants that privacy to maintain that privacy, right?
Right.
So the step one is, if someone violates that person's privacy anyway, right, they breach that person's privacy, that person is in the wrong. However, it is now the responsibility, they've infringed upon the right of the individual whose privacy was infringed on, mm-hmm. right? And they have, in a minor sense, failed in their responsibility to uphold their privacy they want.
Sure.
But that's only to themselves, right?
Right.
So
they've failed themselves.
Yeah. Exactly. And failure to yourself is always better than failure to another, right? Especially anytime you agree to it. So you failed yourself, but the bigger failing is that other person has failed you by violating your rights.
Right.
So that person is now in the most wrong, but it is still now your responsibility to defend yourself, you know, in that situation. You are the primary person responsible.
Okay, so I have something else I'd like to bring up.
Sure.
Okay, so we've talked about a pretty extreme case here in which it becomes okay to violate somebody's privacy in this particular scenario. Now, what about online privacy?
Now, that's a whole other thing, because you can't just use convention like we did
right.
in this case and talk through scenario. However, I would like to go ahead and begin by take the abstractions we drew from the last time. It's your responsibility to ensure your own privacy first. And then if someone else infringes upon your privacy, you failed yourself, and that person has failed you by violating your right and are responsible, then it is your responsibility to seek a corrective action against that person, whether that be on your own volition or appealing to some other authority by which you can contract to right that wrong. Be it
now, suppose it is the authorities who are violating your privacy.
Well, in that case, it is solely your responsibility to get your privacy back, kick them out, and restore your privacy. That's the point where it gets interesting, because then you have, well, technically, I think you should even be able to appeal to, say, a private entity to defend your privacy.
Well, sure, yeah, why not?
Which we do all the which people people unknowingly do all the time.
You ever contract with ADT Security? I mean, that's what that is.
But I'm on the internet. I'm talking about you involuntarily give the responsibility to Facebook to protect all the information you dump on that site.
Sure.
By signing that privacy, their privacy policy, you know, and their terms of use, TM. You agree. They state what they are willing to do to protect your data.
Right.
And you say, thank you. I'm contracting you to protect my data in the way you said. Now, since most people don't read those agreements, they could be admitting to not helping you at all.
Right.
And you're okay with that. So In that case, I don't see any reason why I couldn't enlist the help of others, as long as it is not wrong for me to enlist assistance against the government. It is fine, which people do all the time. People sue the government, and you hire a lawyer, another private entity, to help you do that.
Right.
And you can hire an online security consultant to help you get the government out of your privacy and even create preventative measures for that. Now, the internet is also different, however, because there are no physical boundaries and the internet is everywhere.
Right.
So it's not just your government. It's all governments. It's all people.
Right.
Potentially. The closest physical example I can think of is in the book Ender's Game. They talk about planetary defense. Okay, planets are spheres and they exist in a 3D space. You cannot, in any reasonable measure, defend a planet from anything. You know, you can't build a defense net that can completely secure it. You can't build a wall around it.
No.
You can't even reasonably defend it with, strike craft, you know. You have to be extremely preventative, you know. And there's this concept, what's the Kali motto? You ever heard of it?
I know what Kali is, but I don't know its motto.
It's got, I forget the motto, it's really simple. It says, it's essentially like a offensive security. That's what they call it. Security, offensive security, you know.
Hmm.
Preventative security. So essentially what you do is you try to keep yourself protected by exploiting vulnerabilities in others, you know.
Now, for those who don't know, Kali is an operating system for penetration testing primarily.
Yes. It is a Linux distribution. I wouldn't know. I've never used it, TM. No, there's nothing wrong with using it. It gets a bad rap because people think that, oh, yeah, you downloaded Kali, you're going to be hacking all the fools. It's not true.
No.
But, so that's an interesting concept is, you know, ultimately, though, you're responsible for your privacy. No one else, unless you contract with them, is responsible for your privacy. But even then, you're essentially just forwarding that responsibility, usually at expense to another person, which is always reasonable.
Sure.
So when it comes to violating your privacy, you're responsible for the pursuit of the culprit. I feel like with internet and our online privacy, one of the biggest issues is it's hard to know when your privacy has been violated on the internet.
Right.
You don't know until it's too late.
Yeah.
And it's way too late by that time usually. So, whereas if your privacy is invaded in your home, you if you're there, there's a good chance you know. You know, you see the person, you know. And when it's the government, I think there should be no reason why you shouldn't be able to seek satisfaction for that. And that's why I think, you know, I don't know. Not to get topical, but Edward Snowden was a hero.
I agree.
He was not a victim because he saw that it was happening.
Well, he was a victim.
Well, he was a victim. He wasn't malicious. He didn't give away state secrets necessarily in the to harm America way. He was protecting Americans what he did.
Right.
And I think it's an absolute...
Arming with knowledge.
Yeah. And I think it's an absolute shame the way he was treated and still is treated.
Still is treated,
he
right.
He can't come home. Nope. You know, that's one of my biggest, you know, just disappointments with the United States is that, you know, the way we treated that hero. But I think his case is a great example of the digital version of the guy who wants to run in and invade your privacy anyway. Because Edward Snowden did invade the same right. people's privacies that the government did because he had access to that information.
So for a good one-liner to describe this, there's been the question proposed, who oversees the overseers? The answer is whistleblowers.
Yeah.
But, you know, the overseers don't much like being overseen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens.
Well, and there's also the concept and idea of, you know, the overseers. And I think this is one of the things about a democracy or this style of government is the overseers are positions. They're not people. You know, the average, the people who are overseen are also, can be overseers, you know.
Right.
Like, Edward Snowden is just a man, you know. He attained that job to be an overseer in a way.
Well, he was given to work for the overseers. He was a contractor.
Sure, he worked for the overseers, but he was afforded some of that authority in a way, or he was given access to the information.
Given access to documents that they clearly did not want released.
Right, so. And even violated his own contract in saying that he wouldn't release it, which personally I think was a awful, I'm trying to withhold my language here, a terrible contract, because you essentially are told you can't say what you're about to see. Well, how will I know if I'm not going to say anything until I've seen it? And there's that
whole
thing.
You don't really know what you're agreeing to.
Right. Like, non-disclosure agreements are weird. Leaving it at that for now. But, sure. Yeah. So, I guess in the digital world, bring it back on topic, I guess, you know, in the digital world, it's the same. You know, Edward Snowden took the responsibility for invading our privacy to let us know about it, you know? And he made that judgment call, and he's accepting the consequences of that, even though I don't believe the consequences that he has for that action are correct, which is why I think he's also justified in fleeing those consequences.
Right.
For his own sake. So I think it's, in the abstract, in the digital realm, it's the same. You're responsible for your privacy. If your privacy is violated, your responsibility to restore your privacy, and you are justified in enlisting any help necessary to do that, you know. And yeah, I think it's that simple. And it's a gross thing to violate the rights, the freedoms of another person, especially by an authority, because an abuse of power like that, where, and I think that the reason whistleblowers focus so much on the overseers is because they are in the prime position to not only abuse their power, but to gain more power by abusing it.
Right.
You know, it's a dangerous thing, you know, for any government, or any institution that has the monopoly on force can quickly use that bit of power to just begin taking more and more and encroach. Encroachment in that case, you know. So, yeah.
And I agree.
And I think with the violations of any other right, eventually it might get to the point where there might be a resistance to that. And a resistance to the authority if they refuse to stop. Now, if it's okay with you, I would like I think we need to talk about why it's so important we talk about privacy and why the view on privacy has changed so much.
Okay.
I guess. Because there's always the people out there, because we are 9/11 generation, you know, we're 9/11 millennials in a way.
Right.
Our whole concept of, because we kind of moved on past our other topics, I guess, if this is okay. Mm-hmm. 9/11 changes the discussion about privacy, or it has, you know. The internet before 9/11, airports before 9/11, all of the privacy before 9/11, you know, it was, you had a lot more capability to be private, you know. But after that, now you can't really feasibly go anywhere in any moderately populated area without being observed, you know. And this isn't the public space. You know, the number of security cameras there are in the world, there are more cameras in countries like the United States than there are people by a significant factor, even. I don't know the exact statistic, but I know it's true, you know. Mostly because each cell phone has two of them, and
right.
Almost everyone has a cell phone. Each computer usually has at least one. And then, have you been to a traffic light where there are four?
Mm-hmm.
And that bullcrap about, oh, these are just used to help regulate, you know, the force, you know, the flow of traffic. Yeah, okay. Okay, sure. Yeah, no, they're not. No, they're not. Don't lie to me. They're actual full-on digital cameras.
They're cameras, yeah.
Yeah. So. And I understand the desire to have, and I think there is some benefit, because in this case you are not violating privacy, because when you go into the public, you could be observed by anybody, right?
Right.
You know, the idea of a First Amendment audit is like that, you know, which that's to benefit the civilians too, the citizens as well. You know, you can go up to any government institution as long as you're standing on a public sidewalk, watch what they're doing. And yeah, they're gonna react in a fairly hostile way because they don't like you doing that, but you have that freedom. You know, just look up any First Amendment audit on YouTube and you'll see it.
Right. The government, you know, watching all the cameras and the traffic lights is nothing different than, you know, you and I and a bunch of our friends getting together with radios and hanging out at the at all the different traffic lights in town and watching where this one particular car goes, you know.
Right. And exactly. And recording it with our own little stream cameras, you know. So the issue is like, where do you, and it's hard to draw that line, you know, because especially when, okay, you have the privacy in your own home. I think everyone would agree to that.
Sure.
Behind closed doors, you can do whatever you so choose. You know, whether it's illegal or not, no one should be able to know about it, right? Like, especially victimless crimes. You know, you hear that used a lot in this tense. You know, people who abuse drugs. You know, most people that hear about another person abusing drugs, the first thing they ask is like, well, I mean, are they in their home? You know, it's not like they're out on the school ground with children. Like, you're in your home, no one's going to know about it. And yeah, it's still illegal, but it's like,
but is it wrong?
But is it wrong? It's like, doesn't matter. You know, in your own home, you get to make that choice because no one's watching you and no one can, you can't enforce something on someone if you don't know about it, right? And as long as you're smart about it,
and if no one ever finds out about it, that means it didn't matter.
Exactly. And so you do have the final say on whether it's right or wrong when no one else knows about it, ultimately, in your own home. The problem is, when I can infer about what goes on in your home based on the things in public that we don't normally think about. Good example is anything you buy in a store is public knowledge. Now, should anything you buy on the internet be public knowledge too? Because the internet changes the rules.
Right.
You know,
the store owner probably, you know, well, okay, in principle knows what you bought.
Right. But in a public store, like I walk into Walmart and I walk in and I pick up a thing off the shelf.
Anyone else in the store could have seen you pick that up.
Exactly. So it's public. And I have no reason to believe it should be private. Now, however, if I were to go into an online store and the curator of that online store, you know, I'm trying to put this in frame. I'm trying to do the halfway, you know, the real lap overlap with the realistic,
analog.
You know, the analog. Yeah. I can't see who else is shopping there. You know, it'd be like walking to a store, an instance of a store by yourself, you know, and there's only you and the shopkeep. And no one else would know what you bought besides you and the shopkeep, you know. And so in that way, you know, say we were to operate an online store, we could, you know, have a policy where we don't say what anyone buys. We sell these things and we reserve the right to privacy to know who we sold them to. You know, we keep a ledger, or we don't even have to keep a ledger. Doesn't matter. You know, and then we ship it to an address, and that's it.
Right.
You know. And that's something you can't do realistically, you know, in the real world so much.
Right.
You know, you can't walk into a store with no one else seeing you.
I'm here. Everyone stay out while I'm in the store.
And no one sees what you buy and you walk out with a brown box, or, you know, not even a brown box. You walk out with a huge box.
An ambiguous shape.
Yeah, like a huge 9x9x9 cube that could contain something, you know, the size of a penny in it, but, you know, just to obscure what it could be, you know, and you just walk out and no one has the right to look in it, and then no one knows what you bought, you know. And if no one knew what the inventory of the store was at that time, they don't know what it could have been that you bought. Or even if they do know the inventory, that narrows it down, you know.
Actually, the size of the thing that you bought is somewhat public knowledge because anyone can see the truck drop it off at your house.
And just like on the internet, anyone can see the size of the information being moved, right? That could give you some inference.
Maybe, but I doubt it.
If you're packet sniffing, you can.
If it's encrypted traffic?
See, that's the thing. That the encrypted traffic is the same version of me buying a pencil box but putting it in a 6 foot by 6 foot by 6 foot cube box. You know,
sure.
Sort of. You're fluffing out the information to make it appear to be something different. Just like, you know, it's just easier on the internet because it's data. You can parcel it out into shorter bits, you know, and make it look like a bunch of small things, or you can hide it however you want, you know. You can kind of bend that, but in reality, you can kind of do the same thing, you know.
It's a little more cumbersome.
Exactly. So, but the thing I'm trying to get at is, you know, if I if you buy stuff on Amazon all the time, which people willingly do this, I can figure out what you eat, you know, and that's all public knowledge. And I have the ability now to assemble a massive profile and infer things about you that normally would have been private, you know. It's in the physical world without the internet, it was implied private, you know. Like, it would be unreasonable to and difficult to figure out what a person ate every day unless you followed that person every day, right. Watched everything they bought,
stalked
and watched what they
put in their
stalked them. Exactly. Yeah. But on the internet, that's a lot more feasible. Or even in the modern world, that's a lot more feasible, given how many cameras there are everywhere. And the
if I can have access to the camera system, sure.
Right. Which the government does.
The government does.
Right. So what about that? What about, you know, implicit privacy as opposed to explicit privacy? Do we even want to get into that nuanced area, or is that a place where you can't really apply?
I'm not really sure what you mean, implicit versus explicit.
Well, explicit privacy is like, okay, this is a defined area.
Oh, okay.
In which it is private. Implicit privacy is methods to conceal. I want to keep private information about my life that I can, but the act of doing so nowadays is a lot more difficult than it used to be. Like, for instance,
okay.
The implicit privacy is like, okay, implicit privacy. I can live in an apartment, and there are certain things that I cannot keep private. I cannot listen to music so loud and then also reasonably try to keep it private.
Right.
Or I can't construct something that requires heavy machinery and keep that private. Right?
Right.
So I don't really have the right to that privacy because I can't insure it, you know?
Right.
But if I were to move out in the country, right, and there was a lot of machinery you could see being shipped to my house, you can infer certain things, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just going off on a rabbit hole here.
I think you might be.
I think I might be. I don't know. I'm trying to think about it. It's all the information that can be collected about you. Because when people talk about privacy, that's generally what they're talking about too on the internet is, like, you know, your phone tracks everywhere that you go.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. But most of that information could have been public.
Right.
If someone just bothered to follow you.
Well, okay. So let's talk about that. Now, stalking, it's a thing that is highly frowned upon and illegal.
Mm-hmm. And you can remedy it in analog by filing a restraining order, right?
Right.
Can you file a digital restraining order?
Well, right. Well, I guess, and we may not be able to this evening, but I would be more satisfied if we could get to the bottom of why stalking feels wrong when you can rationalize it by saying, well, really, you were doing all that stuff in the clear and anyone could have watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, like, what's the difference? You know, someone, you know, my neighbor happens to see certain things being delivered to my house or sees me, you know, open things outside and carry them inside. You know, I can't reasonably expect privacy there. Any one of my neighbors could glance out their window and see what I'm doing there. Okay, so what's the difference between these you know, one-off things where someone, you know, happens to see me do something, where as opposed to someone putting forth an effort to see everything that I do?
Right.
There's something to that, apparently, or else we wouldn't have a word for it.
Well, I think, you know, I think it's kind of rooted in a very similar thing. It's you know everything that you do, roughly speaking.
Probably.
And so you kind of maintain a monopoly on your life, in at least the knowledge about your life, in its whole sense. Like, you reserve the right to the anthology of your life, but people might know different chapters and books of it, right? I think the issue with stalking is it's someone else having that record as well. And so they're gathering information about you, and it's like, well, that could be used against me, and because that information is power against me, you know, in a way. Or It's
but why do we think it's wrong?
I think it's wrong because animalistically, because thing that tends to stalk something to gather more information about it tends to be predatory in nature.
Well, yeah, I was going to bring that up. Is normally the reason, you know, the reason why we have restraining orders for stalkers is because, you know, we presume someone is stalking with bad intentions and might do something else in follow-up.
Right. And, you know, we would give them permission to do that if we wanted them to do that. You know, it's like,
right.
Or, you know, they would ask for permission if they probably, if they didn't have, they'd be, if they had less likely to be, have malicious intent, you know.
Right. Might be creepy, but.
Very creepy, but it's like, yeah, okay, you know, at least I, you know, you can make the case that I'm not being malicious. Whereas, you know, if you see any other animal following you around, it's like, yeah, you think he's trying to eat me. Like, you know, that's the biological reason why we're uncomfortable with it, you know, I think, is the parent, it's a healthy paranoia of, you know, I'm being watched. I need to be careful, you know.
Well, well, maybe there's also something to be said about just the fact that it's an unusual behavior. And so this is something out of the ordinary. And so it starts setting off alarms.
Right.
Like people, you know, my life's not that interesting. No one should care that much unless they're up to something.
Right. I do think it's interesting, though, because people tend to think that they have the right to that information, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have the right to control who knows.
Right.
Like, for instance, if I, it's almost as though people just don't want other people to have an advantage against them. Like an example being, people hate it when you pull your phone out and start recording them.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're a member of the authorities.
Yes.
People hate it even more when you start flying drones around.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for instance, you can say that, yeah, well, if a person was 25 feet in the air, you know, you any person who was there could see that. It's like, yeah, but what reasonable person would be 25 feet in the air? It's like, I don't know. Maybe you have a ladder truck. I don't know. But with a drone, it makes that a lot more easier. You know, it's like, oh, because I have this thing, now I can perceive you in a way that the average person can't. You know, and I have that advantage. And people don't like that. People, I think people find it unfair. That's one of the biggest problems, and that's why people get angry. Generally speaking, when people get really angry about something, it's a reaction to them feeling unfairly treated.
Right.
You know, that's generally where I find it to be the most.
That's why one of the common responses when someone whips out a phone and starts recording is for them to whip out their phone and record back.
Exactly.
Like, I'll show you.
Aha! Now we both have so much
information. I'll equalize the situation. Now you're on camera too.
Yeah. But that doesn't make anyone feel better.
No.
It makes you both feel worse. Especially anyone else who's around. And before you know it, we all have our phones out. And it's like, yeah, if anything happens, we're all going to know about it. But the issue with the internet is most people don't have the wherewithal to find out things they want to online that are public information. Like most people don't even know how to pull public records over the internet.
Right.
But they would want to. And it's so funny to watch people get on these sites like locally there's a site that shows all the arrest records and the booking photos for everybody who's arrested for the county that I'm from. And there are the suburban moms who eat that up.
Okay.
They skulk that like crazy because they want to know when someone they know gets arrested for something. And they share it around Facebook and it makes them feel powerful because, you know, they can just do that now from the comfort of their home. Whereas no one is diehard enough to go sit down at the station and just watch for people who come in.
Right.
You know. However.
Or to stop by the courts once a week and ask for the records, you know.
Exactly. You know. But with the advent of the internet, that's easy. You know, you can have that stuff. The ready access to that? Is that how you'd say that? Readily available?
The information is readily available.
Yeah. How do you describe it? Is it readied information?
Whatever.
Sure. but now the information is there. People are... They don't know how to trust them with it, you know. Because the other end of that too is like, well, if this guy's always down at the court, I know he's there. Like, I know they know now.
Yeah.
You know, I was there. I saw him there. I know he knows. I think that's the other thing is with the internet and surveillance like this.
You don't know who knows.
You don't know who knows. And that's where you start jumping to the unknown, the perfect place for the imagination to run wild and find the darkest possible or conceivable things.
Right.
And so... there's something to be said about that. It's unfair that I don't know who knows something. Where does that come from? And oh boy, how big a problem that is in the internet age. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't want to really go too much. I want to stew on that for a while.
Okay.
We should come back for that. We should come back to that. I think that's a great place to start off a different episode.
Okay. Okay with that.
I'll be sure and mark that down because we're already pushing an hour, or we're already over an hour, I guess.
Okay.
So
it's a good time to stop then.
It's a good time to stop. So maybe not next time, but we're going to come back to that. I don't know who knows, and it's unfair. That'll be a good episode.
Okay.
So, philosophers.
Philosophers.